proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 13th of August, Anno Domini 2003, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. And we'll be bringing you, excuse me, and it's a curtain. And
yeah.
All I can see is a curtain.
No, that's when you say it's really dark. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. It's we have the beautiful cerulean skies of Rochester, New York above our heads. 74 degrees, way above our heads, 74 degrees in the big blue room. The light's on, so go on out and enjoy yourselves for a few minutes out there. We're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. Give us a call. You know the numbers. It's 222-1180 in the 585 area code. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. And, of course, if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's star 1180. Well, folks, once again, this week, this last Tuesday, we were graced by Microsoft's monthly visitor. They released 12 security patches, 9 of which are critical. Critical is Microsoft's terminology for women and children first. It's the end of civilization as we know it. The 9 critical security bulletins involve flaws in Microsoft Windows, the Internet Explorer web browser, Outlook Express, and Office. Let me shorten that list for you. Everything they make.
What two products do we tell folks mainly not to use?
Internet Explorer web browser and Outlook Express. 2 of the 4 in which there were critical
flaws. And probably
flaws.
Most of the patches were for that.
Yeah. The 9 of the 12. And those were the critical ones. The other 3, which were only important, involved vulnerabilities in Windows itself. Most of the 11 out of the 12 bulletins were designed to prevent remote code execution. That's something that allows attacker to take complete control of an affected system. The remaining bulletin, 1, addressed a vulnerability that could allow unauthorized elevation of user privileges by an attacker. So if 2 people use your machine, one of them and one of them, you know, is not the administrator, that person could raise their privilege level to administrator, so they could do bad things to your machine. There was a cumulative security update for Internet Explorer that also addressed remote execution issues, and another that addressed similar problems in Windows and Outlook Express, and the MMC, the Microsoft Management Console, the thing that's supposed to keep your machine healthy, safe, and magnificent. There's just a bunch of bad stuff. Microsoft recommends that people download and install the patches immediately. particularly because there are already exploits out in the wild to deal with those. They recommend that companies who normally download these things and test them for a while before they install them not bother testing. Yeah, that'll happen.
We should mention what operating systems the patches aren't covering.
Go ahead.
I haven't read the press release yet, but I'm assuming Windows 98, Windows ME.
They don't bother mentioning that because they already said.
So these critical updates, if you're running an older operating system, you're left out of the loop and you're left vulnerable.
Yeah, oh, well. They don't even bother mentioning that because, they already said officially, June 16th, those operating systems no longer exist. So if they don't exist, that's why you'll never hear them mention again that there's patches for it.
Yep. Oh, well for you. Too bad. Microsoft does not care. So for those of you who are running operating system that Microsoft does care about, that would be XP until Vista comes out, please update immediately. Your system is at risk from everything Microsoft sells. So please update immediately.
Well, that's one thing, though. We're also seeing, though, I think Steve's going to run into it, too. A lot of folks, you know, they're still hanging on to the 98 machine for what little bit they use. You know, it's like, but I got to have this one. Keep running. Well, then you're rolling the dice. Yeah.
You can't buy.
There's nothing else we can do for you. There's no patches. Yeah. There's no patches.
You can't buy any new software that runs on the old OS. You can't buy any new hardware, like a new printer that runs on the old OS.
Right. So you're pretty well stuck.
And when it comes to the hardware, too, I mean, you know, 98 runs fine on that particular machine. Well, just update it to XP. Pentium 2 isn't going to cut it.
Yep.
Not with 128 meg of memory.
Right. Or I want...
And most of the 98 days was 64 meg was standard, and 128 was, ooh.
Right. And or I need a new machine because my old one died, but I want 98 on it because I got this one program that for my business that requires 98.
I've got a gentleman that's like that.
Or DOS even.
Yes. In fact, he wants to run a DOS one. I says, no problem. With XP, we can create a DOS window and run it from there.
That's one of the things we're running into now in the Mac world with the Intel-based Macintosh is you cannot run OS 9 software. OS 9 was discontinued 6 years ago, but you cannot run OS 9 software on an Intel-based Mac. So we're still selling some of our PowerPC-based Macs. And then the other major problem is Adobe's software suite doesn't run natively on the Intel Mac. So it
runs faster on the older...
On the PowerPC, yeah.
Right.
So we're still selling PowerPC Macs for people that need, mostly graphics and video professionals that still need the performance. You know, you buy a PowerPC Mac G5.
Nice. And they are fast, beautiful machines.
Yep.
Oh, before we get to the phones, I've got to say I bought a new machine this week. I must publicly thank Mr. Enright, and particularly Mr. Dan. Mr. Dan, who stood by my side desperately waiting for me to get the thing up and running, because I bought a Linux box, a 64-bit box, put Linux on it, put Ubuntu on it, and spent the entire day updating it. But we couldn't get the really high-end graphics to run, because I had simply not installed one file. I got home and 6 seconds later I realized my mistake. I fixed it. It runs unbelievably. It's fast. It's 3D. It's gorgeous. It does everything. And Google Earth, there is no hesitation ever.
Told you you'd be pleased with that.
Ever. The combination of that system and DSL for the speed to download the stuff. Oh, man. I am so in love with that machine.
Yeah, but it went up fast, though. I was very surprised, you know, because that's the first time I've seen an install of Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And you put the CD in, and it's like, okay, we're here.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. Yeah.
The mistake I made, because I'm an idiot, and I was made the same mistake everybody makes, is when I'd updated everything at once instead of one thing and test it. I would have been done a whole lot sooner and a whole lot more intelligently if I had done it that way.
Yeah, but
I was
you got
idiot.
To hang around the shop. And
I got to hang around the shop. It's fun at your place. I got to play with the dogs. I got to meet Sam. I got to
have some of that soup.
I had the great soup. Great soup.
I got this one place, Steve. You got to try it sometime. If you're over in the neighborhood, it's the Tip Top. And this guy makes a chicken cordon bleu soup.
That was tasty.
It is lunch. So thick, a spoon stands up in it. Yeah. It is great.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I promise we'll get to the folks patiently waiting on the phone. We have Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites at 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 18 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Now, we will get to the phones in just 1 second, but I do want to mention that with the Microsoft patch, that came out on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, the Department of Homeland Security warned about the patch that came out on Tuesday and that everybody should update immediately. Microsoft says that the update is a priority, and now the Department of Homeland Security says the vulnerability could impact government systems, private industry, and critical infrastructure, as well as individuals and home users. Attackers have already started exploiting the vulnerability. Windows Server services are generally enabled by default on Windows systems. Whether you're a server or not, you get the server services started. Isn't that pleasant and charming? And a worm based on the flaw could become incredibly widespread. And the fact that the Department of Homeland Security has taken the rare step of warning about a Microsoft bug underscores the severity of the situation. And those of you who would like to rant and rave about the fact that the U.S. government is using Microsoft systems, that's your choice. But we're going to go to the phones and we're going to talk to Rick from Churchville, New York. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
My Norton antivirus ran out. I unplugged it from the internet, and I wondered, can I go to Mozilla and download safely? I'm listening to you guys on the radio, and what I hear is, because I have Outlook Express and Internet Explorer, I could be vulnerable.
Yes. Well, yeah, but if you go directly, in other words, don't open any emails.
Right.
If you go right to, say, Gristsoft's website.
Well, there's two questions here. Your antivirus is expired, so we recommend Gristsoft's AVG, a really nice free antivirus software.
Uninstall the Norton and get a AVG for free.
And then using Mozilla Firefox and Thunderbird for web and mail is safer than Internet Explorer and Outlook Express. But you still should have an antivirus program to protect your machine as well.
AVG also sells that.
Well, AVG does sell it. There is a free version. On the Security Tango, I recommend all free software, but all of those free versions have paid versions that go along with them, which automate certain features and make it easier to use. And I would certainly suggest that you buy AVG and actually pay for it, but you can download it for free if you prefer.
It's very inexpensive.
Yeah, it's inexpensive, and you should definitely have an antivirus program.
Okay, one other question. How long should it take me to do the Security Tango and install the Firefox or Thunderbird?
It depends on 100 things.
From 10 minutes to 10 days.
Yeah, the question is how fast is your system? How much memory do you have? How big is your hard drive? How many files are on it? It just goes on and on and
on.
There's no way to tell. But it's a long and drawn-out process, particularly the first time.
Well, that's why usually when folks want me to do the Security Tango for them on their machine, I won't do it at their house unless I know what they're having for dinner.
Yeah, it can be an all-day thing.
So I usually
possibly
come over,
as long as they've got a spare bedroom.
Yeah, and I grab the machine and bring it back to the shop and start the cleanup because, you know, I can be working on other stuff while I'm doing the cleaning also. So, yeah, it can be time-consuming. Like Nick said, it depends.
Especially if you have multiple users because you need to run the Tango in each username.
Single user.
Yeah. Right. Even so, it's going to take you a while. Now, the important thing, as I say, is dance the tango, put on AVG, and then download both Firefox and Thunderbird and use those instead of Outlook Express and Internet Explorer, and you'll find that you're certainly much safer. Nothing is 100% safe. You're still running Windows, but you're much safer.
Well, you guys have said so much about Linux. I'm contemplating that.
It's a great operating
it's
system.
It's kind of cool, though. Matter of fact, we're doing that hopefully this week. That other box that you saw on the floor.
You're gonna. I'm bringing you over to the dark side, am I?
Yeah, that's going to become a Ubuntu.
As I tell people, if you use Ubuntu and you do the 32-bit version, I'm having a couple of problems with the 64-bit version that I knew I would have, and I just haven't worked through them yet. But everything I really need to do, I can do. In the 32-bit version, everything works out of the box. It's great. There are some websites you can't go to because they are Internet Explorer only. Frankly, I don't need those websites.
Right.
Well, one of them is Microsoft's own update site, so that you have to keep Internet Explorer around to download. Not on the Linux site, yeah.
Linux, is that expensive?
Yeah, no, it's fairly cheap. Let me think, free.
Yeah, many of them are free. Linux itself is free. Some of the companies do sell a package that includes installers and manuals, and they're relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
But if you go
I can buy that locally?
You can buy it locally, or you can download it and burn your own CD absolutely legally. Go to ubuntulinux.com, .com or .org, one of the two, probably
right.
.org. Ubuntulinux.org, yeah. And click on the download button. There's a menu on the right. Click on download, and you can download a version for your machine. You pick a country, you pick a version, you download it, you burn a CD, you boot it with that CD. In fact, the nice thing about Ubuntu is it will run from that CD, so you can test it and play with it without ever touching your hard drive.
Super.
Then, when you're ready, there's a, I forget what it's called, but there's an icon on the desktop. If you double-click that, it'll start the actual installation to your machine. It's very cool. All right. Our next caller is Frank from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Oh, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Well, pretty good. the I were upgraded to XP from 98. And the situation is I had a bad install to begin with.
Okay.
Which I used the FAT32, and I didn't read the instructions, and I should have used the NTFS.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So one thing leads to another. Had to reformat my entire hard drive, turned around, and just finished that this morning. And right now it says the license is already in use. How
right.
do I reactivate it?
Right. That's because Microsoft believes you're a lousy, no-good thief pirate.
What you got to do is once you to reactivate it, mm-hmm. what you'll do is you'll get a screen, and it'll have this long code. It generates a code. And what you've got to do then is dial the 800 number.
That it should give you on that we can't activate your Windows
right.
screen.
And you've got to manually talk to this recorded voice and put in all the numbers, and it will reactivate it for you.
Okay.
It's just a time-consuming, pain-in-the-butt way of doing it instead of talking to a live person and doing it.
You'll likely have to do it to all of your software as well, because all the Microsoft software, Adobe software, Macromedia software, that does internet activation too, and you may not be able to run your Microsoft Office programs because it thinks it's registered to some other computer and activated on another computer, so you have to go through the same process on that.
Okay, so I've got to do everything.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true.
The office and all that should, not have to call in and talk. Usually that'll do it right over the internet once you get it up and running.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, great. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. I will bypass the difference between those two calls. The Ubuntu, just download it. Everything's free. And the we have to reactivate everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll just bypass that and move on to Dave from Greece, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question? I can't talk to Dave. What was that? This is not Dave.
You have to look at me.
Oh, I avoid that as much as
I know, it's not the most pleasant
possible.
Thing you need to talk. I'm in here going like this, something like, break, you know.
Dave, I apologize to you. Apparently, Rob has bad management skills. And
I thought he was in there just having a party.
Yeah, he's in there dancing, waving his arms around.
Yeah, I thought he's listening to some other tunes or one of the other stations.
You see, the problem is the difference between you waving to get our attention and you dancing in the booth is so subtle, I missed it.
Coming up, reruns of Lonsberry.
All right, we're done. We're going to be back after the news. There'll be news and weather and sports. And on the other side of that, we'll have all kinds of more interesting stuff. And of course, Dave from Greece. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Do sales. It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 31 minutes after the hour, it's
I should have played
bites.
It. I was going to play it. I was going to play the Lonsberry opening theme.
Really
was.
You should have.
Because we are now officially fighting. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, are we now?
Yes.
But Rob, you know I love you. I'm declaring that in front of the world.
Oh, sick.
In a mostly manly sort of way.
We respect him in the morning.
Before we get back to the phones... In response to poor Frank's little problem here, but he looks so good in red. He blushes
so
easily.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
In response to Frank's little problem, Microsoft is going to be tightening the Genuine Advantage screws. What Frank ran into was the Genuine Advantage problem, where Microsoft believes, generally speaking, you're a thief and a pirate. To date, with its Genuine Advantage anti-piracy program, Microsoft has targeted consumers. Windows and Office users have been required to validate their products as genuine before being able to obtain many downloads and add-ons. Coming this fall, however, the Redmond, Washington software maker is planning to turn up the Genuine Advantage heat in two ways. First, by baking more Genuine Advantage checks directly into Windows Vista, and secondly, by taking aim at PC makers, system builders, internet cafes, and other sources of potentially pirated software. According to Windows client marketing chief Michael Sievert, he says, "We expect to do more to make Windows more differentiated." Oh, I thought that was going to say difficult. When it's genuine. And so genuine customers get a truly different experience than non-genuine customers, as well as to make piracy harder. So, for example, under Windows Vista, Windows Defender, which is the anti-spyware product, will only be available to genuine Windows customers. The same is true of Windows Media Player, Internet Explorer 7. And otherwise, you won't be able to get those things, if that actually matters to you.
One of the ironies I keep thinking about is Windows is so bad and has so many security holes and so many viruses. Well, why would someone want to steal it? Well, and one of the reasons for this tightening of the screws, as Nick called it, is unscrupulous dealers who tend to bundle software on computers without including legal disks, or without legally including the actual software, to make their computers more attractive for people to buy. Yeah, we're going to throw in Microsoft Office for free. Well, that's usually illegal because someone has to pay for it.
Yeah. Right.
So, if the price of the computer is $500 more than the price of the one next to it that doesn't have Microsoft thrown in for free.
Right.
Oh, speaking of which, a number of folks I've been talking to were quite upset because they wound up getting one of these Dell computers, and it comes with Microsoft Office. Well, what it came was, yes, it came with Microsoft Office, and it was a 60-day trial.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want to get you hooked to it, and then
you got to pay a couple $100 to unlock it. And it's like, well, no, they said it was free. Yeah, free trial.
Yeah, if you read the fine print.
You know, finish the rest of the statement.
Right. It's in an asterisk somewhere at the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
Right.
So
whereas,
don't complain,
of course, OpenOffice.org is free.
It.
And it takes almost no time to download using your Frontier DSL. All right, our next caller is Dave. Are we finally going to get to Dave, or are you going to play the Lonsbury theme?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Oh, it's Dave. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
I installed Linux on a hard drive so I could mess with it from time to time.
Uh-huh.
And I mess with it for an hour or two and get frustrated and throw the hard drive back in the closet. Windows is so easy to use, and every time I try to do something on Linux, the instructions are like reading Greek. Any place I can go to get...
What version did you try?
It's a, I don't know, Lubuntu or something like that.
Ubuntu?
I downloaded it off the internet and put it on a disk.
I don't know what to tell you. Everything's in the menus just like it is under Windows.
It's different. That's I like your car analogy. You buy a new car, everything works the same, just the buttons are in a different place.
Yeah. Right. You just have to figure out where the radio is.
Like I think I figured out what mounting something is. That's like putting it someplace, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, right. The thing, if you're actually running Ubuntu, everything auto mounts. For example, if I plug my little USB drive into my machine, comes right up on the desktop.
Well, that was just a for instance. That means they tell you to mount something. If you didn't know what it was, then you wouldn't know.
The problem you're having is the terminology.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fairly.
The dummy series. Well,
Unix there's for
a,
dummies.
Yeah, there's a Unix for dummies. There's a Linux for dummies. Somewhere
computer
out on the web,
dictionary.
We'll have to find it right.
Well, whatis.com is a great technological dictionary. Go to whatis.com, type in a technology phrase, and it will give you a pretty good definition of what it means. And I love the cross-referencing it does. So if it uses some other technological phrase, it cross-references it to that definition.
Oh, whatis.com. All right.
Mm-hmm. All right. There's also linuxvirgins.com.
Oh, I like that.
There you go. That's for people who are new users to Linux. I don't know what you thought it was, but
that's what I figured.
And then Mozilla Quest magazine, and we'll put up these links, has a column entitled "Linux for Microsoft Windows Users: An Introduction and Overview."
Okay.
That's a semi regular column that went on for quite a while, and they're all up on the Mozilla Quest website. So those are the things that help you, and those are the things you need. Simple things like, well, what does it mean when they say to mount a drive?
It's the
same thing Windows has been doing for years. Just no one knew that terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
right.
It was kind of tricky in the early days of Macintosh because you had to unmount your drive and then you could physically eject the media.
Right.
Back in the old floppy days, and so we just learned drag it to the trash, and that did an unmount and eject.
Well, right. It's just like back in the old DOS days. You also, when you went to shut down the machine, you used to have to park the heads.
Yeah. So a lot of the terminology has changed over the years, and some of the Windows or computer dictionary programs. There's a really neat dictionary that cross-references Windows terms and Mac terms. So, you know, FAT32 under Windows is HFS Plus on the Mac. So, you know, when you're switching platforms, it helps to know the new terminology.
There's also a version called PC Linux OS, which is also, which basically tries to be Windows. So it would actually be a little easier. So it's pretty nifty. It's pretty nifty. It really is just a matter of retraining yourself.
Well, like he was saying, and you were saying also, is just burn it to CD. You can, instead of taking up a hard drive, just work off a CD, play with it until you get comfortable with it.
Right. The other thing is, if you've had this sitting around for a while, there are newer versions that actually work a whole lot easier. Try downloading the new Ubuntu 6.06 LTS. Burn it to CD, boot it up, and play with it that way. You'll find they've made some great changes to it. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco at 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
From PCs to Macs, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton. Let's play Name That Tune. Come on, Nick, you're old.
Yes, I am, but I'm so old that I don't remember. Well, was this written by Mozart? Because if not, I don't know.
Old tune to a new electronic beat.
Well, actually, this isn't probably that old.
Rod Stewart, Do You Think I'm Sexy?
No.
No.
Just tell us.
No.
Okay, then we'll just move on.
It's called it's called Hot Stuff.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks.
Well, they had those at the sock hops you went to, didn't they?
No. The sock hops I went to, they beat on logs and grunted. Okay. All right, before we get back to the phones, hey, here's a surprise. Symantec Corporation has released a report outlining some weaknesses in the kernel protection mechanisms built into Windows Live under Vista. The report found several potential weaknesses, among them the tight integration of content copy protection, which we know as digital rights management, into the operating system. Yes, it looks to me like DRM will be built into Vista. You won't be able to play anything unless, any music, any video, unless the Windows operating system thinks you own it. This report really focuses mostly on the 64-bit edition of Vista, since most of the new security features will only be available in that version. The kernel mode security improvements include mandatory driver signing, patch guard, which aims to prevent kernel patching, kernel mode integrity checks, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Symantec researchers were able to disable both the driver signing and code integrity patches systems by patching a couple of programs, winload.exe and ci.dll. Symantec noted that code integrity is described as a security tool, but in fact, it is actually part of Microsoft's digital rights management system. The Microsoft DRM is hard-coded into Windows Vista. One implication of this is that users won't be able to run Windows Vista without DRM unless they also switch off Vista's integrity checks. As a result, one must choose between having the digital rights management enabled or else risk attack from malicious unsigned drivers. Microsoft welcomed the report, but said that it was out of date. All right.
Mm-hmm. It's actually worse than that.
Yes, okay, go ahead. What?
No, that's the...
Yeah, right.
That's
why it's out of date.
It's out of date.
That was the problem, but now it's worse. I don't know. It just seems to me that, look, I understand it from Microsoft's point of view. I truly, truly do. They have... they don't make money unless people buy their operating systems. Mm-hmm. And theft is bad. Theft is both legally and morally wrong. I get that. But there's got to be an easier way than starting from the assumption that everybody's a thief.
Yes, and that's the way they're doing it.
There's got to be a better way to do that. I'm not smart enough to think of what it might be, but you would expect that the very, very, very bright people at Microsoft would be able to think of that. It's just a matter of I guess, them being heard. The fact is that you know, they deserve to make money. They deserve that everybody who owns a copy, who has a copy of Vista actually bought that copy of Vista. I get that, and I'm all for it. I would never run a pirated version of an operating system.
Which is probably 99% of the people.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But that's the point. You know, they're spending a lot of time annoying legitimate owners to catch what really amounts to a very few thieves.
That's what I was going to say. Here there are millions, literally millions of honest users, legit users,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a couple, you know, a few hundred illegit users, you know, that are stealing it and that.
Right.
And because of that, the majority is paying for the minority.
Right. And it seems to me that they're spending an awful lot of time and energy and money and resources for what's got to amount to, in the greater scheme of things, an incredibly small percentage of their users. I mean, yeah, there are millions of copies in China that are stolen. But out of the tens of billions of copies they've stole, that's still less than 0.1%. You know what I mean?
It's so small. I mean, you wonder, cost analysis-wise, you know, what they're spending to do that versus what they actually catch.
Right.
Is it really worth it?
Right.
You know, time, effort, and resources and everything else, I mean, the return on the buck has got to be awful.
Right. The real question is, what's their return on investment? And I don't know. But we have smart people who will figure that stuff out. And what's really cool is we have smart people who call us. Our buddy Andrew Welch from Ambrosia Software is on the line. Welcome, Andrew. What's your question?
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
I'm sure you don't have anything to ask us. You actually want to tell us something.
Yeah, I want to tell you something.
I knew that.
Well, you were mentioning about, you know, the fact that thousands of legitimate users and just a couple hundred illegitimate users.
Yeah.
We actually have done something in our software for quite some time where basically people get a license code, and if they don't enter it within a certain amount of time, they have to contact our server to get an updated code.
Right,
because one of the big things we see on the internet is you just pass around codes,
yep.
And then you can steal software because you've got a code.
Right.
Yep, and we keep a log of that stuff, and every day, you know, the log is emailed to us so we can take a look at it.
Right.
More than half of the renewal attempts every day are from pirated license codes.
Wow.
So, I mean, I as a developer, I can't stand the fact that we have to waste any of our time dealing with software piracy.
Yep.
I mean, at my time as a developer is much better spent working on the product.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that if you don't take this into consideration, if you don't spend some time working on it, you're going to get ripped off right and left.
Yes.
I mean, literally it's been this way for about 5 or 6 years that we've kept these log files.
Yeah.
It has never dipped below 50% in terms of the ratio of legitimate renewal attempts versus pirated code.
Does that also count legitimate users reinstalling and then they have to email you for a new code?
No, they don't have to email us for any new code. Their old code will continue to work. It's just that it contacts. Basically, what we do is, if the license code was issued more than a month afterwards, they have to get a renewal code, and this way we can block out codes that are known pirated codes.
Yeah,
right.
But over the period of about 6 years, more than half of the people entering license codes like that, they're all pirated.
Wow,
that's very disconcerting.
It really is. Thank you, Andrew. That does open up my eyes. That's astonishing. And maybe it is a much bigger thing than I thought it was. And, well, I'll have to take that into consideration. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick, my eyes are open, Francesco, and all of you at 49 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, we're once again dissed by the announcer on Soundbites.
I don't know who wrote those.
They're funny.
I mean, you know, I tell you.
They're funny.
Yeah.
And as they say in my favorite year, you never cut funny. Okay. Here's a tough one to talk about. NASDAQ has put Apple on notice. The stock exchange says that the Mac maker is not in compliance with its rules. And that is unfortunately a requirement for being listed. So the NASDAQ may delist Apple. What's happened is Apple delayed a quarterly regulatory filing amid stock options accounting probe. They're being probed. There's an accounting probe going on for stock option irregularities,
which
possibility of them.
They notified the SEC about.
Right. But that caused them to delay a quarterly regulatory filing. And now NASDAQ is saying you didn't file your quarterly report. We may delist you. Now,
we could file it wrong or we could wait and file it right.
Right. But Apple has requested a hearing. It will remain listed on the exchange pending that hearing. And the hope is that they will correct all their stuff in time to get relisted, in time to get relisted before the hearing. So the company, it started back in June. They discovered irregularities relating to the issuance of certain stock option grants made between 1997 and 2001, including one to CEO Steve Jobs. The grant to Jobs was later canceled. Apple said he received no financial gain, which is, of course, an important part of what the FCC or the SEC is looking into. They really expected to get this notice from NASDAQ warning about the possibility of delisting, because they, you know, they knew that delaying their quarterly fiscal results would bring this possibility into play. And the folks at Apple, they knew this was going to happen. They said it's a matter of procedure. They need to file a form 10Q if it matters to you. You're welcome. 10Q following the completion of the internal investigation, and they'll do that as fast as they can, and then that should hopefully cause the whole thing to go away. Now, as we all remember, this is how Enron started, and it didn't go away for them.
No,
but we're hoping that they'll clean all this up.
On some related stock news. To Apple. Apple had their big product announcements this week at the WWDC. Their developer conference ran in San Francisco, which they had nearly 4,000 developers get together to see the next version of the Mac operating system, which is named Leopard. And it's basically giving developers a heads up and letting them get their programs working right before it's released to the general public next spring.
Right.
A lot of the signage and posters and even a lot of the seminars were taking hits at Microsoft that they still haven't got Vista out. Last year's WWDC, when Tiger was released, the big slogans were Microsoft, get your photocopiers ready. So Tiger has made it out, Leopard has made it out, and now the rumor is that the next version of the OS will probably make it out before Vista does.
Yeah.
But the big hardware announcement was the Mac Pro.
Well, look, if Apple keeps putting out new operating systems, Vista's just going to keep being delayed.
Yeah, because Microsoft has to start their photocopiers.
Has to copy. Yeah. Has to, right, exactly. Yeah.
But the big hardware announcement was the Mac Pro, which was the replacement for the Power Mac G5 we were mentioning earlier. And it's actually being called a workstation. It's a quad Xeon Woodcrest computer. Yep. 4 gigs of shared memory per processor. It comes with a gig of memory, 1.3 gigahertz dual independent front side bus.
Nice.
So all the super whiz-bang bells and whistles. They've adjusted the case a little bit, so now you can put 4 hard drives internally. The old Power Mac was only 2 drives.
Right.
So in the old Power Mac, you could only put a terabyte in internally.
Yeah, that's too bad.
That's too bad. The new one, you can put 2 terabytes internally now.
That's closer.
That's closer.
It's getting better.
But you can also put 2 optical drives, which a lot of people were requesting for disk-to-disk copying. What's interesting is that in a break from tradition, they're only offering one basic model for $2,500, but it has 4 million configuration possibilities. And that's a quad 2.66.
Name them.
Okay.
No, because I know you could. Yeah,
it'll go up to, actually, I have it printed out here. It'll go, you can, it comes, the
no, we don't want, no, don't name them.
Well, the standard configuration is quad 2.66.
Sorry.
You can get a little cheaper by going down to only a quad 2.0.
Yeah.
So 4 2.0 processors. Right. So that's we're up to a terahertz now. Or you can go up to quad 3.0.
Nice.
And it's 16 gigs of RAM. is the maximum now. With a new type of RAM, it's the FBD DRAM DIM, the fully buffered DIM. That's only $6,000 to add the RAM.
Is that all? Well, get me two.
Yeah, I get you two. What's interesting is you
That's just for the RAM. That's not the that's system. That's the RAM.
Your computer's $2,500.
And you add $6,000 worth of RAM to it.
Yeah, it's up to twice as fast as the PowerMac G5 running Intel native software. That's the big trick and why they're still keeping the G5s around. So it's twice as fast at a lower price. So you know a lot of people are excited about that. The really annoying thing, and where I started this conversation long ago, is the stock price went down.
Yeah.
Because my feature didn't get released. All of the rumors about what it might have in it, the Media Center edition and all the extra this whiz bangs and yeah, they didn't announce the iTunes phone and so it's always very annoying that the way the stock analysts and the market
well I
reacts.
Think it also had a little something to do with this the NASDAQ announcement and things like that too.
And some of that had already been adjusted last week when they announced the problems were happening but
right.
You know, Apple comes out with a super machine twice as fast cheaper price stock goes down because it doesn't have every single feature that was rumored.
Yep, that's the way the world works. That's what happens when you issue stock. You're kind of stuck with what the marketplace wants as opposed to what you can deliver. Speaking of which, we know what you want and we can deliver it. It's Rob Jason, and he is ready to bring you the news, the weather, the sports, all the most important pieces of information you need to get you through your day. Before we come back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, and with me, Nick Francesca. Are you having a problem in the booth? I see. He's got to shovel the coal and push the buttons at the same time. It's causing him some trouble back there. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with all of you. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? We'll be back in just a couple of minutes at 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, under mostly sunny skies at 76 degrees, you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Are you happy now?
Hey,
is your life fulfilled?
It's the listeners. You know what I'm saying?
Some of our listeners are like in Denmark. They don't care what the weather is in Rochester, New York.
Good call.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Before we get back to the phones, and we will get back to the phones, you need to know I'll do that in a minute. First, let me tell you what happens on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about Centrino Wireless. We mentioned that there is an exploit out that will let people break into your system if you're using Centrino Wireless. You don't even have to be connected to a wireless network. The system just has to be on. And it affects every operating system. It affects Windows. It affects the Macintosh. And it affects Linux. So you need to know whether or not you're using Centrino Wireless and what you can do about that. 322 of you voted last week, making it number 112 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you. The choices, of course, the question was, my system includes Centrino Wireless. The choices were yes, no, and no idea. Overwhelmingly, 74% of you said no, 16% of you said yes, and 10% had no idea. This week's poll, yesterday was the 25th anniversary of the IBM personal computer. In 1981, on August 12th, IBM's 5150 took the business world by storm and moved the PC into the mainstream. 25 years ago, IBM really did change the world, and it really wasn't intentional for them to do that. They basically put together a computer called the IBM personal computer. and hoped only to make a little bit of a profit.
Didn't think anyone would need a personal computer on their desk because they had a big IBM in the basement. So they didn't put much effort into building it.
They figured they'd sell maybe a couple of thousand of them. But the point was, lots of other people had PCs, Apple, Commodore, Tandy, a couple of others.
Apple took out a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal, welcome IBM to the market we're dominating, basically.
Right. And back then, yeah. And basically they said, look, we need to be in the business, but we don't want to spend a lot of money on it. So what they did was something very, very different from their normal culture. Basically, IBM made nothing that wasn't proprietary. But in this particular case, they figured, all right, it's a few of them. There's only going to be, who cares? So they sent a whole bunch of their misfits and rejects down to Rat's Mouth, Florida, Boca Raton, and said, build us a PC, don't spend any money, don't take any time, and don't bother us.
From concept to shipping a product was less than 12 months, which is unheard of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely unheard of. So rather than create a processor, create an architecture, do all of that stuff, they used off-the-shelf components. What they used a processor from Intel instead of their own. They used an operating system from a little company called Microsoft, two words in those days. And off-the-shelf buses and everything else. What made that important is because they used non-IBM exclusive technology, that meant it was possible to clone the systems. The first clone, Columbia Data Products MPC 1600-1, came out in 1982. It made the PC a standard. Suddenly there were two companies making the same product, and therefore, it was a safer bet. It was also true that while it was hard to get some computer named after a fruit into a business, it was very easy to get yet another IBM computer into a business.
Well, at the time, the Apple II running VisiCalc was everything businesses were using.
Right. But you had to make case after case after case every time you wanted one. It was still hard to get them in.
It's the IBM marketing force.
Right.
And which was weird. It was the same argument they had used to not make a PC, because everyone's got an IBM mainframe in their basement. What do you need a PC for?
Right.
When they finally made a PC, the argument was, well, you got an IBM mainframe in your basement. Why don't you get IBM PCs?
Right, exactly. And the PC wasn't only well made, it was also incredibly well documented, which is what contributed to the successful cloning.
So people could steal the software from work and take it home.
Right.
On their cheaper PC clones.
Right. So speaking of VisiCalc, Dan Bricklin, the guy who created it, recalled that IBM provided wiring diagrams, BIOS listings, made it real easy for programmers to write this. Now, there were a lot of other computers around. A lot of microcomputers in that day ran an operating system from Digital Research called CPM. The Commodore PET 2001, Tandy's TRS-80 Model 1. A couple of guys named Steve had a little business
PSR
going with...
That was my first one.
I forget. Yep. Apple, that was the name of the company. The Apple II was actually huge. This computer, however, had the IBM imprimatur, and that was 25 years ago on Friday, August 12th.
So
August
it's 12th. No, the so irony. Saturday, the actually. Irony is that the IBM PCs and PC clones came to dominate the market, not because they were any better, but because they were made as cheaply and as generically as possible, so people could steal software.
And anybody could clone them.
Right, anyone could clone it.
And that meant you no longer had a single source vendor, and a lot of companies have a no single source vendor policy. So that's what made that. Anyway,
for years, Microsoft Flight Simulator was the compatibility test. If it could run Flight Simulator, then it was a true 100% clone.
Yep, exactly. So the poll this week is, to get back to the poll, I've owned a personal computer for, and you have a bunch of choices. And I always get people who say, well, do I round up? Do I round down? I've had one for 42 and a half years, and that doesn't... Round it up, round it down.
Whatever.
Make up a number. I don't actually care. So the choices are less than a year, 1 to 5, 6 to 10, 11 to 15, blah, 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 all the way up to over 25 years. So far, we have had 88 people in the poll, and it's fairly consistently stayed the same so far. 11 to 15 years is the leader, followed fairly closely by over 25 years, and then 21 to 25 years. So please, give us a look up at soundbites.org and enter the poll. When you're done, look at the yellow box underneath it. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. That'll take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Very, very nice. Very nice. Nice drop. I liked it. All right. And where the question is, what was your first personal computer? Those of you who can actually read have told us what your first personal computer was. That's okay. So I'd love to know what your first personal computer was. Just give us, you know, up to 255 characters of it. And then when you're done, take a look around my website. Take a look at the newsletter I produce three times a week. Take a look at all the other stuff that's up on my website. I think you'll be less than confused by everything you see there and hopefully very pleasantly surprised. And then come back to our website and check out the forums and the FAQs and all the links and all the good stuff that we have up there, because we do lots of nifty things in there. all right. Apparently, I'm choked up with emotion about my website and my newsletter. Thank you. We'll go back to the phones while I quietly expire here in the corner. Our next caller is Bert from Palmyra, New York. Welcome, Bert. What's your question?
Hello. Great show as always, guys.
Thank you.
Is it conceivable to load Linux on a machine while Windows is still on it, transfer stuff across into Linux, and then dump Windows? In other words, without having to reformat.
Yes and no. You
love those.
Yes, my favorite answer. You can dual boot, but that requires that you reformat the drive to leave space for the Linux boot. There are programs that will let you do that, but that's semi-dangerous. I suggest backing up at least twice and verifying both of those backups before I tried that. You can all now. What are you looking to move your documents over?
Yeah, you know, address books and stuff like that.
Right. One of the things that I might suggest, if you don't have a whole lot of them, is to get a USB drive. You know, one of the thumb drives?
Yeah.
They come in 1 gig, 2 gig, 8 gig, 16 gig formats.
Gig.
So you can plug one of those in, transfer all your stuff over, make sure you've got it all. This is after you've done your two backups, right?
Yeah.
Make sure you've got all your stuff, and then load Linux. What's nice about that is, again, if you use a product like Ubuntu, when you plug that USB drive in, it'll just find it and read all the files. You can then load everything in. If you're using the same programs, for example, if you had Thunderbird on one, because I just did this. I just moved everything from my Windows box to my Linux box. Now, I still had the Windows box up, so I did it over the network, but it's the same idea. I pulled everything over, and I was able to import my address books. I was able to import all my mail. I was able to grab my bookmarks. I was able to move all my documents over. And the neat thing about Linux is that, particularly when you're using something like OpenOffice.org, which comes with Ubuntu, if I double-click on a Word document, it opens up the OpenOffice Writer. If I double-click on an Excel document, it opens up the OpenOffice spreadsheet called Calc. If I double-click on a PowerPoint document, it opens up the OpenOffice presentation package. So it does all of that stuff immediately for you. It's very, very simple. And then from then on, you can save things as docs if you want to, or save them as the OpenOffice format, and pretty much do anything you want with it. It reads almost every, I have yet to find one that it doesn't, but I'll still say almost every document format that's out there. By PDFs,
really cool.
Open up in events, it all works.
Excellent. So thumb drive would be the handiest way.
Well, that would be, yeah, that would be the safest way, because when you start doing the dual boot reformat thing, if you format the drive flat and put Windows on and say, just give me half the drive, then when you boot Linux, it'll say, oh, the other half of the drive is empty, why don't I use it? I do that on this laptop. I dual boot all the time. But when you already have a partition, if you reformat it, they say it works perfectly. I've had one bad experience, and now I'm gun-shy. You know how that goes?
Yeah.
But Linux is a great product. You can also, you know, if you want to just test it out and you have an old machine around, throw it on that.
Yeah.
Yes,
or
it'll run slower.
Or dual-bootable CD.
Or you can dual boot off the CD. Now, again, it'll run slower because it's running off the CD, not the hard drive.
But now you can play around and you won't damage anything.
Right. But it's all, you know, whichever way you want to go is perfectly doable.
Okay, very good. Thanks very much.
There you go. Good luck. Have fun.
I would think the CD would be the safest in that, you know, since you're just getting your feet wet.
Right.
Granted, it's a little bit slower, but you can make some changes and, you know, play around with it and check the environment out and see what it can do and can't do. And if you accidentally try to delete something because it's running off the CD or DVD, you can't change anything on that because it's not writing to it.
Right.
So you can muck around with it all you want and not going to hurt anything and learn that way. And it's far safer than trying to put it on a hard drive. And if you accidentally delete something or want to do something else on your other machine.
The other thing is when you have a dual boot situation, as I have here, one of the things that you can do is set it up to read from the Windows partition. Or write to the Windows partition, mm-hmm. if you like. And that lets me move things back and forth. The Windows partition can't see the Linux partition.
So when your Windows gets infected, it won't destroy your Unix.
Right.
Exactly.
same thing on Mac with Boot Camp.
Exactly. All right. We're going to take another quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We got Rhonda on the line, a bunch of other people. Give us a call. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you at 19 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Talk you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, under cerulean skies with fluffy white clouds, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. What? You didn't like my description of the clouds? You describe them.
Too many.
Yeah. Rob can't even see that far. Were you out a little late last night,
Rob? We've got a few buildings in the way.
I can see one, two, I can actually see three clouds. Yeah. Oh, so wait a minute. When you keep saying, tell them what it looks like outside, that's because you can't see any sky whatsoever from where you are.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I see.
And
now I understand.
Driving this machine here. I don't have time to look out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Let me get my feet up.
Yeah, exactly.
It's getting a little deep in here.
Yeah, how many of those monitors actually have the show on it? Well, you know, he's in there. He's watching TV
and playing
games.
Yeah.
All right, Internet Explorer, by the way, is losing more ground to Firefox. It's lost further market share this year. There has been a slowdown in the acceptance of Firefox, but everybody's kind of delayed a little bit or down in their share. Speaking of delayed, the delayed release of IE7 could be a bad omen for the Microsoft market share. But they have announced that when it is released, it'll be distributed as a live update, which means A, it'll be tagged as a security release, and B, you'll get it whether you want it or not. But there you are. So, and Microsoft, or rather, Firefox has slowed down because it does have a number of incompatibilities with IE-only sites.
Hey, Nick.
Which is up to developers to stop making IE-only sites.
Yeah, well, yes, please stop.
You know what's funny is how many people get defensive when you try telling them how bad Internet Explorer is in the Switch.
Yeah.
They get upset like you've, you know, insulted one of their children.
Well, half the people don't know,
they don't know
what browser they are using. Yeah. They don't know there are alternatives.
They don't have a clue.
Well, Internet Explorer works fine for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I have no reason to change. I know a couple of people like that. It's like, okay.
It downloads all that spyware just fine for you.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't know what's going on in the background. And that's part of the problem. And, you know, the reason is these things, it's all in the name. The personal computer. You've insulted them because it's their desktop.
Right, right. And they think they know the best thing for their computer. And, you know.
And, well, when they're talking to us, they're wrong. Oh, sorry. Our next caller.
We're just more right.
Yes, they're right. We're just more right. Thank you. Thank you. He's a uniter, not a divider. Our next caller is Rhonda from Geneseo, New York. Welcome, Rhonda. What's your question?
Well, I've been trying to update the Lavasoft Adware SE because it's like 36 days old.
Right.
And when it goes in for the update, the window pops up that says performing web update, and then it will freeze. And it's showing that it's starting to download the percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it kicks back and says no updates. And I can't believe there's no updates available for this in the past 36 days. So I'm wondering.
Oh, yes, there's been updates.
Have you danced
week.
The entire security tango?
Have I what?
Danced the security tango.
No. I am really computer illiterate, and I've got, I think, the basics on there. I have Norton antivirus on there for my firewall and stuff like this, and I've got this to go in and get rid of the spyware, but I think something's going on that's stopping it from getting its updates.
It may be that you have one of the few viruses that actually will try to kill the other products like Adaware and SpyBot and Norton. Let me suggest this. Go to securitytango.com. Down the left-hand side, you'll see a series of buttons. One of those buttons is for Let's Dance. It's Let's Dance, just above Nick's blog, is the Let's Dance button. If you click on that and then print out that page, it's a step-by-step guide to what we call the security tango, which is a way to get rid of all of the spyware and viruses.
But she's going to run into a problem, though.
If she's already heavily infested.
Yeah, she's already heavily infested. She's not going to be able to get the update for Adaware to get that out.
You can go to the Lavasoft homepage directly and download the definition file, which is dated 7 August, so it's only a week
what
or so
What I
old.
Would suggest, Rhonda, before doing that is uninstall Adaware, reinstall it, and like Steve was saying, download the definition.
Manually.
Reboot your machine in safe mode and try running Adaware in safe mode.
Okay, tell me how to do safe mode.
All right, when the machine is rebooting, all you do is keep hitting the F8 key.
After the power light comes on, but before the Windows logo comes up.
Yeah, and just keep hitting the F8 key, hitting it, and you will get a menu. The first option is safe mode. Try running it there.
Okay, when you say to go to the home page and download manually, how do you download manually?
Click the button that says
just
download.
Just click on the button that says download.
Oh, okay. I've tried to do that, and it'll give me the same message.
No, not in the Lavasoft, in the Adaware program, on the Lavasoft homepage.
On the Lavasoft webpage.
Right, that's where I've gone. Adaware download personal or downloads page, and I've clicked on that, and it'll start and do the same thing.
You've got something really wrong.
Yeah,
you
got something else
then
going on there that you might want to take it to somebody and have them look at it.
Yeah, what it sounds like, Rhonda, is you've got more than one problem, and you're going to need to take it to somebody. One of the nice things about that, taking it to somebody, is if you take it to someone like Steve or Dave, they can put it on their bench, attach it to another known clean machine.
Mm-hmm.
That can't be written to, so they can't get infected from you. Mm-hmm. And they can put your hard drive on their machine and clean it up from their good machine so that the viruses you have cannot and will not run.
Okay, and how do I get to them?
I'm on, if you want to call, just call us at 442-4843. It's Enright PC, and we're at 70 Empire Boulevard.
And Jesse Group in Victor, 7716 Victor Menden Road, which is Route 251. And our number is 924-1920.
So either one will do you.
Or if you have a local PC shop that you've already worked with, they're more than welcome
check
to
check them out,
do it too.
There you go. Good luck.
But most of them should have a flat rate, though, for cleaning out something like that. I mean,
I hate to see people who have gotten so bound up with viruses that they can't even fix it themselves.
Yeah. Well, the problem with that is,
it's not certainly not Rhonda's fault. These things happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
One of the problems we run into is that we tell someone it's only going to be an hour of billable time, and so they come back in an hour. Well, no, it's elapsed time could be a week.
Yeah. You're right. When you're talking about viruses, absolutely.
Yeah.
This machine has to crank and crank and crank.
Well, that's the thing. And what we mean by that, and I think Steve will agree on this too, is when we say hour, that's the hour billable. It might sit on the bench and be working on it, you know, be cranking away, say, 6 hours. But we're only physically going over every so often.
Yeah, time in front of the computer.
Yeah, right. And touching the actual keyboard, it amounts to about an hour. Although it might take, you know, like I say, 6, 10 hours or more.
Right. And luckily, you are not actually charging for all of those hours.
And that's where
if we go to your house,
then every single one
every
of those
single
seconds
hour counts,
gets
cut.
Right, exactly.
You're sitting there paying me to watch that thing click away, and usually I want to know what you're having for dinner that night.
And whether the spare bedroom is set up.
Yeah, if it's comfortable, you know, I might.
Sure. Our next caller, Dave from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
I think I have an infection in my master boot record.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And I'm just wondering, other than the recovery console, I'm running Windows 2000 Professional.
Yep.
Is there a DOS utility available to fix the master boot record?
F-disk will do that.
Yeah.
Which will also erase the rest of your hard drive.
No, yes.
If you just type in F-disk, but if you type in F-disk/MBR, right. It replaces the master boot record.
Even in Windows 2000, it works.
I believe so.
Mm-mm.
No?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't tried it.
There's no F-disk in it?
It's NTFS. What version of antivirus software are you running?
Norton 2005.
All right. Now, do you have a second computer by chance?
There's like 14 of them.
All right. What you might want to do is create, with the Norton, you can create a boot disk with the updated definition file.
Okay.
On the clean machine, create that boot CD or boot disk so you can run a scan. In other words, when this infected PC starts up, it will be running off of either the CD-ROM or DVD drive or the disk drive. It doesn't get to the master boot record of the actual C drive, and you run it from there so nothing else gets loaded and cleans out your boot record before it even gets loaded.
One of the tricks there is to make sure you power off your computer because there are some viruses that can survive a restart, a warm boot.
Yeah, what they call TSRs, terminate and stay resident.
So completely power it down.
Yeah, power it down, boot it up, and have that either CD or disk in there with the updated definition files and let it do a scan. It will scan the whole C drive and the master boot record, and if there's anything in there, it'll clean it out.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yeah, see, that's something where, like you were saying, Nick, in our shop we can literally, as opposed to messing around with that, I just pull the hard drive right out of the person's machine, put it on my test bench where nothing gets loaded. I mean, yeah, when it's loading, it knows that drive's there, but nothing gets read off of it, and I can do a full scan, clean everything off, and be done with it.
Right. That makes sense. All right, our next caller is Bob from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
I have a HP 8230 laptop, and I'm going to make a recovery disk, and I select it inside one of the menus, and it pulls up a screen and says, files waiting to be written to CD. It won't let me do it. I'm not sure what these files are. It says copy to a CD. Do I need to copy these other files to a CD before I can make a recovery disk?
It may be remembering the last CD you burned.
Yeah.
One of the features of Windows is when you burn a CD, it saves those files in your hard drive so you can burn that CD again. So you have to clear the CD cache.
Yep.
In order to make a different CD.
So I should just go into that, open it up, and just select delete and simply delete it if I don't need to copy.
Yeah, remove that if you don't need that one and start a new one.
Gotcha. And then I should be able to make my recovery disk.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah, if you go into your CD-ROM drive, right-click on the CD-ROM drive. Go into my Hello. Hi. How are you? Go into my computer. Right-click on the CD-ROM drive. Select Properties. There's a recording tab, uncheck enable CD recording on this drive, and then close everything out. And then you can do what you need to do, and then you can go back in and turn that back on again if that's what you want to do.
If you do frequently make multiple copies of a CD, then the feature of saving those files so you can burn them again is handy. But if like most people, you just burn it once and then the next CD you burn are different files, it's very annoying to have to go and clean those files off that CD, cache image.
Right. All right, our next caller is Barbara from Albion, New York. Welcome, Barbara. What's your question?
I've been trying to look at a card that I got in the email, and it says I need to do a plug-in update. I tried to do the plug-in update, and it took me 12 hours, and it still wasn't completed. So I went into the control panel where it says to do the Adobe add and remove, and I thought it said that I could update it, and I pressed the button, and now I don't have Adobe. Can I have someone else download Adobe from their machine onto a CD and then put it on my machine?
Yes.
Well, Adobe is a publishing company. They make dozens of programs. You're probably referring to the Acrobat Reader.
Yeah.
And that's very, very large and will take forever on a dial-up. And if there's a hiccup along the way, you have to start over again.
But the answer to your question is yes, somebody could burn it to a CD. That way you could put it on your machine, put that CD in there, and load Acrobat. I think version 7 is the current one.
Yeah,
right,
708 is the current version, but depending on what operating system you're running, you may need an older version. So you have to find a friend that has high speed or a public library or something like that to download the full reader. The other annoying thing, the way Adobe works it is when you go to their website to download the reader, it downloads a reader downloader, mm-hmm. then downloads the reader. So you have to make sure you go to that second step, or the only thing you get is the downloader and not the actual reader right. itself.
And the other problem is, are you on dial-up, Barbara?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's.
I'm not able to get any speed.
Right
cable
where you
or
are.
Anything like that.
Right.
There's always satellite, but that's kind of expensive.
Ludicrously yeah. expensive, and of course Verizon is EVDO now.
Yeah, EDVO. Just ask any one of your friends; yeah. they should be able to do it in no time for you.
And once you get that, then you can put the CD in, install it, and be done. That's probably your best
you
bet.
You might
want to
check
point.
Through some of your existing CDs you already have with the computer, because a lot of programs come with the Acrobat Reader already
it, yeah.
because manuals come in reader format. So if you can find your computer CD or if your video card CD or some program CD, take a look on that CD. You might find the Acro Read is the file name you'll probably find.
Yep.
And you may have the Acrobat Reader already on CD.
Right, but it'll be an older version, but yep. that's okay, too.
That could be your problem. If her computer right. came with Reader 4 and she's trying to download a program that, or a document
requires
that
seven
needs
or whatever.
Seven or six or seven,
yeah.
Yeah. All right, our next caller is from Farmington, New York, and is it Gray or Gary?
What was that?
Is it Gray or Gary?
Gray.
Gray.
Yes, sir. Hey, I've got a question about Macs as far as auto-running CDs. Is that still, I've read someplace where they may have deactivated, they didn't like it. Now it's the new OS.
They deactivated that about 15 years ago because viruses can easily live on CDs. And when you put a CD and if some program auto runs, the virus can be told to auto run as well.
Mm-hmm. So they've got to what, click on an icon or something on their desktop?
Right. The CD icon pops up on the desktop and you open it. The same is true for Windows. You should disable your auto run under Windows because it's a very easy way for viruses to get into a computer. It loads on a CD and automatically runs.
So the software to make hybrid CDs is just a waste of time?
No. Then you can use the same CD on a Mac or Windows. That's the concept
That's
of a
saying.
Hybrid disk.
The hybrid CDs supposedly allude to the fact that they can make the CD auto run on a Mac and or PC.
No, hybrid disks are readable on a Mac or Windows.
Okay.
If you create a Windows auto run procedure and put it on the Windows portion of the hybrid disk and the PC has auto run enabled, then you can tell the program to run automatically, and the
yep.
same on the Mac. But
auto run is not automatic, at least on a PC. You need specific sets of files on that CD in order for Windows to recognize it as auto-run.
And the same on a Mac. But with the operating systems disabling auto-run for the security danger, you just make an icon that says click me, is what most installers do.
Right. All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. At 39 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, under beautiful blue sky, 78 degrees in Rochester, New York, you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. See, now Rob is happy. It's all I have to do to make him happy is tell the temperature.
Well, now I got to figure out who I'm going to bribe to come over and cut my grass. Because I don't want to do it.
Well, you hire somebody.
Neighborhood kids.
They
yeah,
have now.
Neighborhood kids don't do it anymore. You can't find anyone.
I've got a guy that does it for me and he just comes every week,
yep,
does the lawn, no headaches, sits there, you know, does all the edging and everything else, and it's beautiful. Because I don't have the time, nor, especially on these hot days.
Write down the phone number, will you?
I've got a friend that that hired a lawn service because the lawn service is $20 an hour, and but his company, he bills at $80 an hour, so he figures that the 2 hours it's going to take to mow his lawn, he'll lose money if he does it himself. That's assuming that he would actually be working instead of watching someone else mow the lawn.
Well, this is the thing, you know. I'm busy. I got plenty of stuff to do down the shop. To sit there in my small lawn, this guy comes over, does it so darn fast, I don't have to maintain a lawnmower. I don't have an edge trimmer and all that other stuff that, you know, it takes up time. It's bad enough during the fall. Here, I don't have a darn tree in my whole lot, but yet I wind up with so many leaves during the fall, it's unfreaking believable.
Well, we always wait till the end of the fall when all the leaves have come down before we rake them up. We have neighbors that will rake every single day. If there's one leaf on their lawn, they go out and rake it up.
Last year, though, the leaves didn't fall that fast. And what a mess. It's like, yeah, I'm at a wind tunnel. And as the leaves fall, as they come down a blow, they come right in front of the shop entrance. And usually each morning, my wife's out there raking these leaves.
Every time you open the door,
the
they
door.
Come blowing into
yeah,
the
yeah, they're stamp. Blocking the door. She gets up, oh, at oh, dark 30.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
There are a couple of companies, you know, that make robot lawnmowers. So you get this thing, you set it to do your lawn, you give it the dimensions or whatever you give it, and then you just sit back and it goes out, it mows the lawn, it puts itself back in the recharger, you never have to look at it again.
Well, I always wanted to take one of those self-propelled lawnmowers and stake it on a chain.
A guy
so,
already
so
did
as
that.
It. As it winds itself around the chain, it just comes closer and closer together and then mows your whole lawn.
It's already been done. Did that. They had him on the news, and it was going around the stake, and he even put a switch. So once it got too close, so many feet from the pole, it automatically shut itself off.
How do you beat
it's not
that?
Too long until we're able to sit in the house and just press buttons and everything's done for us.
Right.
You know?
Robomower.us.
Robomower.us.
So what happens?
It's like that robot vacuum cleaner you can get.
Right. Those work great.
And what happens when you get interference? The thing goes nuts and runs over the neighbor's cat.
It mulches.
Goodbye, kitty. No.
Yeah, it's a built-in mulcher.
It mulches. It's got a triple chamber mulcher system, 5,800 RPM blade speed. I don't think anybody will ever know.
Oh, that's horrible.
Here, kitty, 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 kitty.
Yeah, but the grass will be greener next season.
Yeah.
It
backs itself into the charger, and then at the prescribed time, you set it all up. It doesn't do it electronically. You're not controlling it like it's a radio-controlled airplane.
We should let folks know, the animal lovers, you can write to Nick Francesco, care of Wham Radio.
I own cats, and I love them. I love them deeply.
Especially when they ketchup. Help the grass grow, right?
No, my cats are much-loved and well-protected animals. I love my
And
cats.
You got two dogs.
And I have two dogs, and I have two cats, and we're very happy with all of them. But if you can't laugh, you might as well cry.
Yeah.
All right, before we get back to the phones, Intel is open sourcing Linux drivers for their Generation 4 graphics systems. This makes me very happy. I just mentioned I got a brand new machine from Dave. It includes an NVIDIA 9700 or whatever.
512 megs of memory.
Yeah, it's a beautiful video card. It lets me do all the things I've always wanted to do and never been able to. And the reason it works so well is because they open sourced the drivers. They're one of the very, very few video companies who've done that. And now Intel is announcing that immediately free open source software drivers that support both their 2D and 3D graphics features of the 965 Express chipset, which is great. That includes, for those of you who are video geeks, it has the 965 family includes support for programmable vertex, geometry, and fragment shaders. By open sourcing these drivers, Intel will enable the open source community to experiment, develop, and contribute to the continuing advancement of open source 3D graphics programs, such as the three-dimensional Linux desktop programs XGL and Compiz. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, at 49 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Steve, on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you're listening to Soundbites. As you know, blogging and having your own personal space up on the web has become the new social networking method. We've got MySpace and Facebook and all of those others. Well, Microsoft has launched their own site called Windows Live Spaces. It came on board August 1st, and I'm afraid that the launch has not been smooth, to put it as politely as possible. Really, this is the successor to MSN Spaces. There's been a variety of problems, particularly performance problems, problems with actually publishing things. There have been rendering problems, and here's a shock, browser compatibility problems. The Windows Live Space team has acknowledged that Spaces disappointed a bunch of you with the issues we had in our rollout. Now, the first 12 hours of the new platform was just horrible. Performance was terrible. And that's, of course, a black eye for Apple, for Microsoft, because they're, of course, running all this stuff on Windows servers, and you would tend to think they would have put up a bunch of high-end machines so that it looked its best. But instead,
it's not that, though. It's what they try to rush to get in to do something that somebody else is already doing. It's just like on their spyware program, their anti-spyware software, which is a piece of junk.
Right.
You know, they quick rush in because, oh, they got to be a part of it, too. It's like you do one thing somewhat decent, stick to it. Yep. You do OSs and, you know, Office products, stick to it.
Yep.
Well, don't try to be everything to everybody, because something is going to fall through the holes or cracks.
Well, the irony, too, is you always hear about these overnight successes. You know, MySpace has been around, a couple of years now?
Yeah, right. It just suddenly
it's
got popular.
It's an overnight success after 2 years of working at it.
Right.
And they hope to be profitable this year.
Yeah.
So they've been losing money for 2 years at it.
Right. But now they're hoping to get there. But they had
same
a whole
thing with
lot of
YouTube.
Problem. What?
Yeah, same sort of thing with YouTube. Now there's dozens of video sites popping up.
Right, right. But they, you know, they had problems with the statistics pages not working. The emoticons don't render correctly. Publishing email was caused a lot of problems. And of course, Firefox browser compatibility issues. Apparently, a lot of people who use LiveSpace use Firefox. That came as kind of a shock to the people at Microsoft. But apparently, they're going to learn to live with it. It's an interesting problem. We've got lots of students now who I'm systems administrator for the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And we have a lot of students use places like MySpace and Facebook.
Well, it used to be having your own domain name with your own name was big.
Yes, but now you don't have to spend the money to do that. You can get a free account at one of these places. The problem is they end up with somebody gets their email address or gets their phone number. How did they get that? Well, you published it on the web. Oh, but only for my friends.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. All right, well, as you can tell by the music in the other room, as Rob comes up out of the dungeon, we're at what? What, he's got nothing to say because he can't find the button to make his microphone work.
You know what?
No, what?
Let me show you where the button is.
Yeah, I know where the button is. Thank you very much. I appreciate the thought. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton at 58 minutes after the hour. I am Nick Francesco, and you've been listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.